Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon.
You're with Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero for the workday afternoon. A recent study conducted by a team of researchers from SGH, Duke NUS Medical School and National Cancer Centre Singapore found that stage 3 colorectal cancer patients who underwent surgery and chemotherapy fared better across multiple aspects of quality of life, including physical and cognitive function, compared to those with stage 1 or 2 cancer who had surgery alone. We find out more about the study and what it means next on Health Suites with Money FM 89.3.
Health Suites with Clarissa Montero on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health Suites on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero. As March is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, we look at a recent study that might change treatment decisions for patients. To tell us more, we are joined on the phone by Dr. Isaac Xiao-En, Consultant Colorectal Surgery, Singapore General Hospital. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the introduction, Clarissa, and it's my privilege to be here.
It is our pleasure to have you. Now, there's a lot to talk about, so let's jump right in. Could you unpack the research by SGH, Duke NUS Medical School and National Cancer Centre Singapore that highlights some of the key takeaways before we deep dive into some of these findings and their implications?
Yes, it's my pleasure too. This study was conducted over the course of 2 years, from 2017 to 2019, and is led by the Department of Colorectal Surgery at SGH. In this study, recorded 400 survey responses from cancer survivors of colorectal cancer who were on follow-up with us. And the surveys that we administered to them specifically assessed the quality of life of these cancer survivors, including the sexual health and their symptoms over the longer term. Now, traditionally, I think cancer research focuses on survival outcomes. For example, how long do cancer patients live, you know, after particular treatment, be it 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, and so on. But, you know, with medical care improving and the therapies and surgeries rapidly improving over the past decades, cancer care and survival rates have progressively improved. So there's increasing recognition now there's a need not just to prolong survival from a cancer perspective, but also to prolong meaningful quality of life of these survivors. Now, I'll give you some local numbers, perhaps. Singapore is the world's longest-lived people with an average life expectancy of 85 years. Now, this is according to a 2017 Ministry of Health report. However, we are also expected to live 11 years in poor health, which is 1.5 years longer now than it was in 1990. And cancer was found to be a second leading cause of this poor health. So we felt it was timely in our department to examine the quality of life, or QOL, amongst colorectal cancer survivors to determine how we can improve our care for these patients. And all our patients, you know, 400 of them in this study, had previously undergone surgery for the purpose of cure with an average duration of about 6.5 years from their previous surgery. So this is a very broad study. I'll just share some interesting highlights. And the first, as you mentioned, was that patients with stage 3 cancer had better QOL scores than patients with early stage cancer or stage 1 or 2 cancer. And a substantial proportion of these survivors, or close to 60% of men and 40% of women, continued to be sexually active after cancer surgery. So quite a lot more than what we expected. However, dysfunction sexually in this group were quite common. And markers of socioeconomic status, including employment, education, housing type, were found to significantly impact this patient's perception of certain aspects of the quality of life.
Right. Okay. Now, first of all, you got me very concerned when you said 11 years in poor health.
Yes.
I don't want to live the last 11 years of my life in poor health.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. None of us do.
So in the past, with advanced cancer, you know, patients were often assumed to have poorer quality of life. This is coming back to my point. Compared to those with early cancer, in this research you're talking about, it was found that stage 3 colorectal cancer patients who underwent surgery, which, you know, we assume would be the case, and chemotherapy fared better across multiple aspects of that quality of life, including physical, cognitive function, etc., as you mentioned, compared with that stage 1 or stage 2 patient, cancer patient who had surgery alone. Why is that?
Yes. So very interesting. I mean, late stage cancers or advanced cancers can be defined as stage 3 or 4,
mm-hmm.
and early cancers would be stage 1 or 2. Now, in this study, we did not include stage 4 cancer patients because these patients tended to have quite limited survival.
Sure.
So in our study, we compared patients with stage 3 cancer versus stage 1 or 2 early cancers. Now, in general, as you say, more advanced disease, patients with more advanced disease would have undergone more complex or difficult treatment, and in some cases, chemotherapy or radiotherapy on top of surgery, which is not usually required for stage 1 or 2 cancers.
Right.
So it's therefore surprising that stage 3 cancer survivors report significantly better physical, cognitive and health and global health scores, as well as less fatigue, you know, compared to stage 1 or 2 cancer survivors.
Okay. What would be the reason for that? Were they getting better care? You know, because I'm trying to figure out why someone with a less severe stage of cancer might not necessarily have the best outcome. But that is the assumption any of us would make.
Yes, you're right. Well, there are several possible reasons for our findings. Patients who are diagnosed with more advanced cancer would have experienced more intensive follow-up, including blood tests, scans, investigations, and possibly even chemotherapy. I think this is the case for any cancer patients. You know, after we do surgery on them, they don't not just discharge from our care. They see us over a couple of years. And this is more so for the advanced cancer patients. You know, so for these patients, they would have undergone a physically and emotionally more stressful time. And therefore, subsequent recovery from this time may have resulted in a more optimistic outlook relative to patients with a less eventful post-operative period. And this phenomenon has been seen in other studies where cancer patients actually report better psychological scores compared to normal patients, normal healthy non-cancer patients. And the second possibility that we sort of concluded is that the increased frequency of this clinician-patient exposure for patients with more advanced disease. So this increased frequency might have provided more opportunity for patient reassurance or management of expectations by these healthcare providers, you know, be it the nursing staff, you know, doctors, oncologists, and so forth. And this kind of demonstrates the therapeutic relationship between the clinical consultation and cancer survival outlook. So you ask, what can we learn from this? I think we know there's considerable discrepancy, you know, between the patient's perspective and doctor's perspective in quantifying quality of life. So therefore, you know, patient-reported measures like this reported in this study, where you ask the patient to fill out what they think, what they feel, are very important to us as researchers. And quality of life is defined as standard of health and happiness experienced by the individual. And of course, it's quite subjective. So I think what is important to doctors may not be what is important to patients. And our findings show that it's quite essential not to neglect the psychosocial aspect of patient care.
I see. So now there's the secret right there.
Yes.
Now, in the past, a doctor will be rather, you know, a rather godlike figure. Let's be honest. And as a patient, you're not an expert in the subject. And a lot of patients, particularly older ones, would be afraid to question their doctors, ask questions of their doctors. Maybe that's what needs to happen. There needs to be more of a relationship, almost friendship between the doctors and the patients.
Yes, absolutely. I think I agree with you. Even though doctors are less gods right now than service providers, you know, patients are getting more educated and they do a lot of reading, a lot of Googling, if I may say so.
That's true. But, you know, the thing is, you first of all, you've got to trust your doctor.
Yes.
Second of all, the doctor's got to trust their patients, also understand what is best for them. And that becomes a partnership rather than a relationship of medical professional to sick person is what
absolutely.
I'm saying.
It becomes,
you know, both of them become stake owners in the outcome for that patient.
Yes. Yes, you're right. I think, back to our study findings, I think we as healthcare providers have to learn more, and we have more to learn, rather, from these findings than the patients, you know. And a paradigm shift actually is required for us to consider that our duty of care actually extends beyond ensuring that the patient's cancer, you know, is treated, but also that their well-being is ensured, you know, long after the surgery performed and chemotherapy is administered. And I think, you know, with this, we could encourage the cancer doctors, oncologists to build on this, as you say, you know, friend or therapeutic relationship between a patient and doctor, and potentially even more resources can be allocated to setting up facilities, you know, or services. It can cater to these so-called unmet needs of these survivors of colorectal cancer. And even, you know, in the long run, maybe cancer support groups and survivorship events can possibly take over the role of doctors in building and maintaining these emotional needs of these survivors.
So how do you think this potentially changes the way doctors should manage their patient interactions? I'm assuming it's going to put pressure on doctors as well. Now, I realize doctors are very busy people.
Yes.
And you have more than one patient. I mean, to me, I am the only patient that matters. But you have more patients than just me. So does this potentially, I mean, it will change the way doctors relate and interact with their patients, but does this potentially put pressure on them that isn't there already?
Yes, well, I agree in some ways that it does. But, you know, we do recognize that we do have a duty of care.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, the more we find out, the more this duty extends. And, you know, we have to take on the responsibility onto ourselves. And potentially even, we can even extend this to our primary care physician colleagues, because in the long run, they may be the ones seeing cancer patients, survivors, long after we have discharged the patient from our care.
Right.
And they can continue this care, you see. So it's not just perhaps the one who treated the cancer, but any doctor or any primary physician or the follicular doctor who sees the patient in the long run.
Now, colorectal cancer is the most common cancer in Singapore. I didn't know this, although I should have, because I've spoken to colorectal doctors before.
Right.
Over 60% of patients expected to survive more than 5 years from diagnosis. From a patient's perspective, and this comes back to an earlier point that you made in the study, surviving is one consideration. Living healthy, productive lives, and it goes back to my statement as well, I don't want to be sick for the last 11 years of my life. I don't want to have poor health. How do these findings from this study push the needle on that?
Yes, I think it's quite apt that you're finding out now that colorectal cancer is the most common, because it's March and it's a colorectal cancer awareness month. So, very good. What you mentioned is very much the premise of the study.
Right.
Well, surviving cancer is only the start, you know, but living means not just surviving, but surviving well. Right. So our study is very much the first step to understanding the physical, emotional and sort of psychological needs of cancer survivors, mm-hmm. and it's one of the largest so far to be conducted on this topic in an Asian setting. And a bit more about the study, we actually looked at three aspects of survivorship health. The first was sexual health and mm-hmm. body image, gastrointestinal and urinary function, and as well as quality of life. Now, quality of life was further divided into 8 domains, as is standard practice in research.
Okay.
Physical functioning, role functioning, emotional functioning, cognitive functioning, social functioning, fatigue, financial symptoms, and global quality of life. And using analysis, we're able to identify the trends between three aspects of sort of survivorship health and their relationships between social demographic and disease-specific characteristics. And most of our findings actually are a bit too technical for this platform. But at present, you know, we don't have solutions to all the potential issues that survivors may face.
Right.
But this study does, you know, intend to kickstart the conversation and interest in survivorship care in Singapore and hopefully the region, where research in this topic still lags behind the West, unfortunately.
Okay. No, I think you're right. If you start hitting me with heavy data, I might fall out of my chair.
Yes. We won't do that here.
All right. But primarily, and of course, this is hypothetical because I am not a cancer patient, surviving the cancer would be my first priority, getting through surgery, getting through the radiotherapy, getting through chemotherapy. And I remember this from a conversation I had with my mother who did go through cancer.
Right.
The day that she went to a spa and had her hair done and had her nails painted and had a facial and everything, and she walked out of there feeling like $1 million. She had been the happiest she had been in at least 6 to 8 months prior to that. So that is how important feeling good about yourself, and it was part of your study, that self-image thing. And
well, I actually have an interesting study to mention, since
please.
You mentioned this.
Yes, please.
Well, you know, there was a survey done, I think, in a quite important journal a couple of years ago, quite recently.
Okay.
That you know, sometimes for colorectal cancer surgery, we need to do a stoma bag in the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And in this survey of Australian patients, patients were willing to sacrifice 1/3 of their remaining life expectancy to avoid having a stoma.
Right.
You know, yeah. So actually, you know, body image issues, psychosocial issues do come into play when I talk about colorectal surgery. And a lot of patients have ideas of, you know, have want to live a life that they want to live after surgery and not just to live XX years.
Not just to live, period.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So with that in mind, and you've said this study is the start.
Yes.
Will you be researching more in depth into how do you take care of not just the physical aspects of survivability, but the emotional and psychological well-being of the survivors?
Yeah, well, our next step, I guess, as researchers in this field, is to obtain responses from normal patients, you know, without cancer,
mm-hmm.
who are matched with our patients in terms of age, so the data can be compared.
Sure.
Because one limitation of our study, of course, is that, you know, function and quality of life can deteriorate simply because the patient is elderly, you know, have other age-related issues like diabetes or heart problem. And obtaining these results from a normal population can determine if the issues for survivors are actually psychological, physiological, or due to the cancer treatment. So I think that's the next step that we're going to go.
Okay, now one of the preconceived notions of cancer in a lot of cases is it is the elderly, but that is not the case, is it?
Well, for colorectal cancer, it generally tends to be.
Okay.
The incidence rises quite sharply after 50 years old.
50 is not old, Doc.
You're right. But it rises exponentially after 50.
Okay.
And although we are seeing increased incidence in younger patients as well, but in general, you know, patients like our study, the average age was 64. So colorectal cancer is still in Singapore very much a disease of the middle to later ages.
All right. Now, before I let you go, I understand that there is a webinar for the public on March 26, which I suspect will be quite an intriguing webinar to attend. Give us all the details.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, our department is holding a free webinar this Saturday, 26th of March, in conjunction with Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, which is this month, and it's entire month, not just one day. So a panel of experts will be holding talks in both English and Mandarin on colorectal cancer screening, prevention, and what symptoms to look out for. And the QR code to register is available on our Facebook page at SGH Colorectal, and it's free to register. So please join us to know more about the most common cancer in Singapore.
All right. And that is also not just for potential patients, but for caregivers, family members of someone
who might be.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Clarissa.
We've been speaking with Dr. Isaac Siao-En, Consultant Colorectal Surgery, Singapore General Hospital Doctor. Thank you for sharing these findings and your insights with us. It's been incredibly informative.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate the time. I'm Clarissa Montero for the Workday Afternoon. You're with Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.